Welcome to Am I the Bleep?
Hello and welcome to Am I the Bleep? That's definitely going to clip. I'm so sorry that you have to edit that. Anyway, Am I the Bleep is a podcast where we read Am I the Asshole posts and then we decide whether or not they're the asshole, as you do. But then we do something a little bit different, a little bit twisted. We coach them. We try to make life better for these people and give them a direction to go after they've finished their post. But before we do that, we read the title of these posts and we decide, are they the asshole? That's right. We coach and we pre-coach, sort of. But we'll get to all that. First, we're gonna just shoot the shit, you know? We're gonna shoot the breeze.
Oh, we swear now on the show?
We're gonna shit the fuck.
Yeah, as we do.
As we do.
Well, good morning, Jonathan. How are you? You're all right?
Oh, good morning to you, Jonathan. I am well. How are you?
Good to hear. I feel like we've known each other for so many years. I was thinking about it this morning as I'm waking up. I'm brushing my teeth and I'm like, cool, you know, we're going to record an episode of Am I the Bleep today. And I'm like, shit, fuck. I've known Jonathan for like literally 18 or 19 years. That's a long time. That's more of my life that I've known John than I haven't.
Oh my and gosh,
over the years, we've done, you know, many exciting things together. We even had one fight that ended with one of us punching a locker one time. It was wild. And then we went to high school together. We hung out. We've eaten so many pizzas together.
So many.
Eaten it all. And I've realized there's something I don't know about you. And that's, it's bothering me. Like, I literally, like, spit-taked my toothpaste from my mouth. The foam. Sorry to paint that picture for you. You know, like, my beard was covered in the toothpaste foam.
I'm
like,
you loudly exclaim, shit, fuck, as the...
As you do.
As you
like,
do.
Like, I have no idea what John's favorite soup is. I had no clue.
Oh, man. Oh, gosh. Oh, golly. What is my favorite soup?
And now, in my head, I'm like, okay, it's possible that he likes the classic. John is a big minestrone guy.
That's
but in my head,
classic?
I'm like, but in my head, I'm like, or like a chicken noodle soup. Like,
yeah,
a clear broth, a clear broth, a noodle, a protein. You know, maybe some rogue frozen vegetables that people just throw into soup, like peas or things like that. And I'm like, wait, no, he's definitely somebody who takes, like, you know, the pureed vegetables and then dollops the sour cream on or things like that.
Oh,
or
God.
Maybe you like dessert soups. And this has been plaguing me all morning.
Soup?
Okay, like a chilled cherry soup. You've never had those before? They're delicious. So that's not your favorite. You don't even know about this.
Are you living in some sort of soup purgatory where your experience of soup? First of all, minestrone is not the default soup. That is a wild thing to say. And if you're eating minestrone, being like, "Oh, this is the only soup there is," that's wild. But maybe, I guess minestrone is vegetarian, right?
Minestrone, is it vegetarian?
It sounds like it.
Minestrone soup. I feel like it's no meats, vegetables, pasta. Yeah.
Okay.
This is minestrone is a classic.
It's not, but it's not the default soup. The default soup is chicken noodle soup, obviously. Does ramen count?
Ramen is a soup.
Does it count as, like, can it be my favorite soup?
I don't make the rules.
Ramen is my favorite soup, but it's pretty hit or miss, right? Like, that's the thing. It's not like pizza where, you know, even bad pizza is still okay. If you have bad ramen, it's really, really shitty, and it just usually just tastes like salt and nothing else.
You feel like when you're talking about bad ramen, are you talking about like cup of noodle ramen, or are you talking about going to a restaurant and getting ramen that's just not good?
I was talking about the latter. I think the former is more like, it is soup, obviously, and it's a different experience, but I don't think that you can really judge a type of soup based on its cup a noodle form. It's
a different category of soup completely.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's like a different thing. I would say that, like, you know, comparing like, I don't know, chicken to canned chicken isn't the same thing at all. They're different products at the end of the day.
Are you a big canned chicken guy?
Am I a canned chicken guy? No, I'm a canned tuna guy. I don't think chicken should come in a can. What about you?
I don't mind canned chicken. I used to love canned tuna growing up, and now famously I'm allergic to it, but
yes.
Canned chicken's like the closest thing you can do. I prefer a homemade chicken salad, if I'm being honest. And I also don't think chicken salad is salad. I think it's its own category. Stop calling things salad that are not.
Are you sad that on the top of your Wikipedia page, the first thing it says is that you're allergic to tuna?
Is that what it says?
Yeah, that's what you're famous for.
Oh.
That's what you're known for.
My legacy.
Your legacy.
So hey, wait, so ramen, good ramen is your favorite soup?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Just clarifying. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Write it down. Hey, if you're wondering how people stay friends for almost two decades, this is it. You talk about nothing. You talk about absolute nonsense. What's your favorite soup?
Me?
Yeah.
No, we're breaking the fourth wall. You, the listener.
I was going to say probably soup? Minestrone based on the crazy thing you started this episode with.
No. I love butternut squash soup. Oh, I love the pureed vegetable hearty soup. Soups are one of the few things that I almost prefer a vegetarian soup. I love like the harvest squash soup. And then one thing I've learned from my many years of having many friends who come from Eastern Europe is you dollop sour cream into your soup and it becomes a whole different thing. Although recently I went to San Francisco to visit a mutual friend of ours, and she took me to the one Russian-ish restaurant in San Francisco. I forget what it's called. I'm so sorry, restaurant in San Francisco. And I had borscht for the first time because it usually has beans in it, which I'm also famously allergic to. Check my Wikipedia page.
All right.
But I had this borscht and the sour cream, and it might have trumped. But I think there, for me, it's kind of like it's two different categories of soup. You have your, you know, hearty, like I put everything in the fridge inside of my pot and made a soup out of it type soups. And then, you know, the holiday soup, like butternut squash.
What are you talking? Holiday soup?
I love soup.
No, we're moving on.
All right, read a post. Let's move on from this shamble of an intro I created.
Oh, man. Okay.
I'm sorry, everybody. Wait. Before you start, I feel like I want to take a moment to apologize not only to the listeners here, but also to you, John, for coming up with such a shamble of an intro. I'm so sorry. Before the show, we're like, who's going to run the intro? And I'm like, don't worry, I got this one. And the best thing I came up with was soup. And I'm like, yeah, we're just going to go into it. Don't worry.
I think it was the confidence that you went in. I found out today that you're a thick soup guy, and I think that is worth it.
If the sour cream don't come on top, I send it back.
Disgusting. Okay. User no information 2439 asks, am I the asshole for forcing my daughter to wear a uniform and not considering other options? And before we read the post, I'm going to say yes. He is the asshole, or she is the asshole.
Or they. Yeah, the second I see the word force, I'm like, total asshole.
Yeah.
Just to clarify, I think you brought it up in the beginning, but we said we were going to talk a bit more about it later. We're going to read the title and the author of the post. We're going to give our snap judgment, which is something you should never do in any kind of warm counseling, coaching, therapeutic type relationship. But we're on a podcast and it's a lot more fun to be prejudiced towards people. Yes. But yeah, I see the word force and I'm like, total asshole.
And I honestly, like, this is demonstrating why you don't do it, but who knows? Maybe we're right on the money. Am I the asshole for forcing my daughter to wear a school uniform? I have a 14-year-old daughter. Uniforms are common for schools in my area. Our school district was the last one to not have a uniform. Before winter break, they did a trial uniform for 1 week and then decided to make school uniforms mandatory. When my daughter found that uniforms were mandatory and threw a tantrum, we ended up having to go shopping without her for the uniforms. She says it denies her individuality and is abusive. She asked me to put her in another school without a uniform, but basically every school in our area has one already. We checked several schools, and the only one without a uniform is a secular private school, which costs $14,000 per year, which I feel is too expensive. Another option is boarding school in another city, but that's even more expensive, and my daughter is now angry at me and wants me to find a solution so she doesn't need to wear the uniform I told her there is no solution we can afford and told her to deal with it. My mother also hates uniforms and thinks I should homeschool my kid or put her in a virtual school, which is possible, but I don't know if that's a good idea. Sorry for the choppy reading, folks. The punctuation in this one is lacking. My mother also hates uniforms and thinks I should homeschool my kid or put her in a virtual school, which is possible, but I don't know if that's a good idea. My husband thinks we should just keep her in public school. Am I the asshole?
I love the line after before, and I just saw you cringe.
Yeah, I was just like, after before winter break. So
pick a side. Is it after winter break or is it before? You can't have both. Time is a different thing.
Yeah, it's good that we don't decide this based on the grammar, how much of an asshole.
We wouldn't have any show, to be honest, yes, if we did.
Hey, y'all, English is hard. We get it. We understand. So are they the asshole?
Right. That's my turn to go, I guess.
Yeah, you forgot the premise of the show. You're too busy thinking about thick soups over there.
Yeah. I kind of was. I'm kind of hungry. Okay. So for me, if there's something, okay, we're 14 years old. We have a developing brain. We're able to rationalize things and we're able to have conversations with people in reasonable ways. Forcing a teenager to do something, I don't know what parenting school you went to. In my head, it just doesn't work. You have to have a conversation. Talk about the expenses. Talk about all the different things and the lengths you're going to, and maybe even do that research with them. But talk about, you know, what are the best ways we can come to a reasonable solution? Because spending, you know, an extra $14,000 a year for your family may not be a viable solution. You can have a conversation, go through it, and then come to some reasonable agreement. Maybe there's some other way that, you know, the daughter can express her individuality. Maybe there's some different measures they can put in place with the school because they feel like it's not fair. There's so many different things. Going rogue and just saying like, hey, daughter, you got to wear this uniform. And they're like, no, it's abusive. It's wrong. And then just going and doing all of the different steps yourself and being like, well, I don't know what to do. You're not gaining any ground. You have to have a conversation, collaborate on coming up with a solution here. 14-year-olds generally are very, very capable of this. And from a coaching perspective, I, you know, like go to, you know, no_information2439, if that is your real name, and just have a conversation about like how to collaborate with your teenage daughter and make decisions together. Cause just, you know, forcing is a strong word, and I wonder where else that force is coming in, right? I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Are they the asshole still? I think pretty much the asshole. I feel like, again, that force, I just don't like that word. And then also, I think there are many more ways to be collaborative with your daughter, and we're sort of missing the plot here. Because, what do you think?
I'm going to say they're kind of the asshole. I see where you're getting at, and I don't think you're completely out of line in saying that like it's not what they're doing isn't particularly kind to their daughter. But I would point out some things. I feel like we do have to remember that 14-year-old children don't really have like a great frame of reference for how bad something really is. But they do use vocabulary that they pick up over time. You know, the term abusive means something. I don't think this applies, but I would say that it is, she is trying to express a feeling of being, you know, put upon, of being forced to do something, to use your own words, OP. And I think there, in lies the problem in that, you are not the one forcing your daughter to wear a uniform, technically. The school is. And there's a lot of room for collaboration here to say, hey, I don't particularly care for this uniform. It seems like you don't either. Let's see what we can do to let the school know. And if we fail, we fail together. And if we succeed, we succeed together. But yes. I can't just switch you to a different school. I know from your perspective, that seems like the easiest option, but you're either going to another school where they wear a uniform, or we can't afford anything else. And virtual school, like I mean, now I'm talking as myself, I don't know if I consider that an equivalent, nor do I consider just picking up homeschooling because you don't like one feature of a school as being like a good plan versus teaching your daughter how to collaborate in order to try to overcome an obstacle. If, I can't imagine she's the only one who feels this way about, you know, the uniform. I feel like there's also, data and evidence you can point to say like maybe uniforms aren't as good of an idea. I don't know. I feel like I say kind of an asshole because I don't think making your daughter wear a uniform is the assholery of this whole thing. It's just how you're going about it. And I would also point out, like, if your reaction to your daughter being upset isn't to like recruit her as a young adult, as a preteen teenager to do some legwork herself, I would just point out that you're basically raising her to expect others to do the work for her.
Right. And I think that's what I was trying to get at. And I think you worded it a lot better, where it's like, okay, we have an issue here. The school wants you to do this and you don't want to do it. So rather than looking at all the different solutions and being a team to figure it out, yeah, I'm immediately going to take it on myself to move schools and teaching like the runaway, when it's not like it shouldn't be the first option. There's like 100 different options that are in between. And think right. about, you know, what we're teaching as a skill, right? Like later on, you're starting a new job and they have expectations of what you wear or how you act or how you speak. And if we teach this from the get-go, where it's like, okay, you gotta, you know, you don't like something, you just like mm-hmm. immediately walk away before coming to a different solution. You know, like you're like, you work hard to get a job and then you're like, okay, I guess I'm leaving. Like, that's the only thing I know how to do, right?
I would, you know, and I would also point out to both of our biases here, because we both went to private school and we have come to the conclusion after the fact that the expense, which was even more than $14,000 per year, I would point out for quite a bit of it, was not worth it. And I'm not saying that all private school isn't worth it, but our bias is that, hey, if you're like looking at this option, if you're looking at your options seriously, you should be very daunted to like switch to private school at the drop of a hat. That's like a lot of money that you're dropping on avoiding something else. Like you want to be really sure that the private school you're sending your kid to is 100% worth the money because of its own merits, not because you're trying to avoid something else.
Right. And then also OP noted it is too expensive, and 14K yeah. a year. It's like, it is a lot of money.
For sure. For sure. But you know what isn't a lot of money?
Reading the next post because our time is worthless.
No. Oh, that's too real. No, it's rating and reviewing our podcast on all the different apps. So you give us 5 stars.
Yeah, I just jumped to a conclusion way too quickly.
You definitely did. No, our time is worthless, but your time isn't worthless, which is why we really appreciate when you go and rate us 5, 6, 18, 103 stars on the different podcast review apps like Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever you're using, because it really helps other people find our show. And the more people find our show, the more they'll understand Jonathan's thick suit proclivities.
Patent pending.
Patent pending.
I'm going to go ahead. Yeah, but yeah, do it.
Cool. You want to read the next post? Leaviest plug ever. Go ahead.
Okay. Am I the asshole for winning money and only giving my bio child money?
So you definitely didn't forget to read the username there. You just noticed that they're deleted.
No. I was going to read the title first and the username.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I don't know. It's like, am I the asshole? It's like whatever the,
oh, so I'm the asshole here.
Whatever the Robert Munch book is by Robert Munch. You don't say Robert Munch wrote this book.
No one knows who Robert Munch is outside of the Canadians listening to this podcast.
Hey, this podcast is all about me today and my thick soup proclivities.
Yeah, fair enough.
Let's try again without you interrupting me, bastard. Am I the asshole for winning money and only giving my bio child money? Posted by deleted. I don't know how you punctuate brackets. There's square brackets around deleted. So yeah, let's go for it. Am I the asshole for winning money and only giving my bio child money? I, 30, am married to my husband, Tony, 35. We have one biological daughter together, Claire, who's 5. And he has a daughter, Anna, 10, from a previous relationship. Right before Tony and I got married, I went on my bachelorette trip to Vegas and won a significant amount of money. The money was a premarital asset, so it went into my account and I paid off some debt and then took the remaining money and put it into a trust for Claire. Recently, we found out that Anna needs surgery, so Tony's ex-wife asked for help since it'll be very expensive. Tony talked to me about it and asked if we could use some of the money I won in Vegas. I explained the money was in a trust for Claire and we couldn't take it out. Tony got upset. I only thought about Claire and never put anything aside for Anna, especially since it happened right before her becoming my stepdaughter. We got into a big argument and he's not speaking to me. Am I the asshole?
And you totally forgot to add
this. Yeah, I was going to say, I am the asshole.
Right? Oh, we're bad at this. Never mind. Give us one star. We deserve it. Am I the asshole for winning money and only giving my bio child money? I would say when just listening to that title, I would have said definitely the asshole.
Yeah, it's absolutely same.
100%. But now that we've heard the thing, I'm going to say pretty much the asshole because depends how much money it was, I guess, a little bit. Like, putting money in a trust implies that you won quite a bit of money, but maybe it was only enough to have a trust for one person? Like, is that a thing? Is there circumstances here? I don't know. Okay, I'm gonna say pretty much the asshole, only because we have a kind of confirmed record on this show of, you know, insisting that if you have a stepchild, that is your child. You know, there is no functional difference. There's obviously like a historical difference, but there's no functional difference in how you should treat that kid. They are your kid. They are your responsibility. You should love them and raise them, et cetera, et cetera. And part of that is, you know, putting money aside for emergencies and their education. I don't think, though, that it's completely fair for Tony to be mad at you because he's had, who knows how many years, several, he's had a while to be upset. He's had a while to be upset, and it sounds like he wasn't upset until his daughter needed the money. And I don't think, so then, therefore, I don't think the thing that he's saying he's upset about is what he's really upset about. I think he's kind of filtering how upset he is about his daughter's condition, her need for surgery, into something that he feels like he can be upset about. But I still think that you should have probably put some money aside for your other daughter. So I'm going to say pretty much the asshole. So you got downgraded by one category from definitely the asshole to pretty much the asshole. Congratulations. But who knows?
Which is not bad.
The asshole thing. Hey, you know, remember when you asked me if we swear on this show and yet we regularly say the word asshole? Anyway.
It's literally the whole thing.
Pretty funny. What do you think?
I was wondering when you would catch on.
Yeah.
It took me
half a show.
The question I have in this case is, if I'm talking to deleted, and that's the user who wrote this post, in case you forgot, and I would ask, like, when you're 80 years old, and you're sitting around the fireplace with your family and you're telling, you know, the great story of your life to your, you know, soon grandchildren and great grandchildren. What happened? And you have to be very honest in this story. You say, you know, like, hey, I got married to Tony, love him, my life. You know, we both had kids from different relationships. We came together in a beautiful marriage and our kids were so happy together, but one needed surgery. But I had all my money in a trust, so I didn't share that money to help that kid through the surgery. It is what it is.
Sorry, in this imaginary scenario, are you around the fireplace with your family? Because in this person's case,
no.
I imagine they would know the story.
Obviously, this is a hypothetical. It's an exercise.
Okay.
And the idea is that you have to say, if that sounds good to you, say like, yeah, you know, I was putting the money away in a trust. That money belongs to Claire, but And that's what it is. But, you know, we then went and strategized and figure out ways so we could put some money together for Anna as well. If that feels good for you, totally cool. Another thing about that money is depending on the structure of the trust, if you're able to take out some of the money, and, you know, anybody who is really into finances and stuff like that, the Jonathans here are not, but if you're a Jonathan who knows finances, we'd love to hear from you too. You can take out a little bit of money, support the surgery. I know there's probably some down payment type structures or things like that. If this is America, then you could help support that and then replenish the money over time. Because, you know, Claire is 5. The trust probably doesn't come to fruition until they're 18 or until they hit a big life milestone or something like that. And that might be a solution too. And being closed off to those options is, in my head, a pretty much the asshole type thing. But I think, John, you brought up a really good point that when somebody sees their kid struggling, and in this case, you know, we don't know the condition, but needs surgery and it's expensive surgery, so we can imagine that it's a little bit involved. Of course, that person is going to be heightened. And then in those conversations you're having where you have the solution to their problem and you're like, hey, I'm not going to do that. They're going through it. So you have to take time to recognize that your partner is struggling because their kid is struggling. And that's really, really important. So getting into big arguments and not speaking to each other does not serve your relationship or, more importantly, Claire and Anna. So I think that's kind of like the double-edged asshole type behavior here, patent pending. If you're Jonathan, who's a legal expert, also please talk to us. We have some big ideas. But yeah, so ultimately the better way to go about this, I think, is, you know, maybe that money is set aside, but at least have a conversation about how you can work together to support. And especially if you do have the means to do so, maybe there are some systems in place. Maybe there's some payment plans. This can be a bigger conversation than arguing and not speaking to each other. And it must be, I think. So pretty much the asshole.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad we're in agreement. I just want to go back to your fireplace amnesia exercise. Do you think that all elderly people are just delivering on this exercise when, like, you hang out with your grandma and she's telling you things that, like, she's told you maybe 17 times already, stories about the past that you've already heard many, many times because, she's just saying like, okay, like clearly everyone's forgotten everything. And now I need to revisit my past in order to decide if they support my decisions.
I don't think it's so literal. I think for me, something that's helped me inform some of my decisions has been this exercise. And when I think about telling, you know, the great story of Jonathan Ariel Friedman, I'm like, does this decision, is it great? Does it serve a purpose? Does it show, you know, like I went through some challenges, or does it show me being a total dick? And it helps put it into perspective. And I might still make the, you know, I am but a simple man. But if I have the opportunity to think of it in that perspective, it helps frame it differently for me. And in some of the work that I've done over the past while, I've actually brought this exercise up just to see, like, how do people, like, approach it, think about it, journal about it. And actually, it's really interesting. People really, it really does help to reframe and re-perspective, whatever that word is.
Reframe. You got it.
We'll stick to reframe.
Okay, I see what you're getting at.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, if that's something you want to try at home, it's just like you have a big decision you have to make. And rather than thinking about it, what do I get now or don't get now from the decision? Which sometimes you have to make a quick decision. You have impulses. You have immediate needs. It's just an interesting question to ask to help, you know, think about it in the long term. That's the whole thing.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go.
See, so, we do give value on this podcast. Our time is not meaningless.
I like the things. Oh, we've upgraded our time. Nice. Okay. Well, in order to respect our time, I'll read the next post. Username acanthasywilling69. I did my best. Am I the asshole for going to my birthday dinner without my husband when he wasn't ready on time?
Not the asshole.
I'm going to say not the asshole.
Birthdays are sacred.
Exactly. It was my 40th birthday. The poster is female. A few days ago, and we had a reservation for a table at a nice restaurant for 7 p.m. Takes about 20 minutes to drive to the restaurant, so I plan to leave the house at 6:30 p.m. to build in time for traffic and picking up my father. My husband, who is 43, had decided to do a bit of work on his car about half an hour before we needed to leave. At 6:30, when the kids and I were waiting by the door, he was still doing it. He hadn't changed and hadn't showered. I told him to quickly get ready, but it got to 6:50 and he still wasn't ready yet, so I decided to just leave without him. He has a habit of always running late when we go out, and he is always the last one to be ready. Normally, I can tolerate it since it only sets things back by 10 minutes at the most, but my birthday dinner was important to me, and I had been looking forward to it for weeks. Making us wait for 20 minutes was taking the mick. So I yelled out that we were leaving and left because I didn't want to lose the table since we would have arrived at about 7:20. I called the restaurant to let them know we would be late, and we luckily still had our table, but my husband didn't show up at the restaurant, and when we got home, he was mad at me. I told him that I was tired of him not respecting my time and always making people wait for him, and that he could have made his own way to the restaurant. My father agreed with my decision to leave without him, but my kids were a little upset that he wasn't there to have dinner with us. Am I the asshole?
No, not the asshole, but in our discourse, we're going to go through a much better way to approach these sorts of problems. But I will say birthdays are sacred. This is a running problem. You set a limit, and we're going to talk about setting limits, which I think are important when we're dealing with these sorts of behaviors. But to this husband, I ask, like, what do you want in your relationship? Like, it's their birthday. You're waiting for them to get home to be angry at them. Dust yourself off, you know, like, eat a peach and then go to the restaurant and then try again. For OP, I'd have a conversation where it's like, okay, you said you want to leave at 6:30. You already have a sense that they said they're going to go do their car. They might be a little stubborn. They're going to be late. But what do you want on your birthday? Do you want them there? If you want them there, say, okay, hey, I see that you're going to fix your car. That's totally cool. I know that's something that's really important to you. I need to leave at 6:30 sharp to be there at the restaurant. If you're running late, it doesn't make me happy, but we're going to leave at 6:30 and you can meet us there. We're going to have a spot for you. And if you're running a little late, let me know and I'll order dinner for you. That way we can all eat together. I think that would set like an expectation of what can happen after, other than just come or don't come to the restaurant, which I think in this case made nobody happy. But birthdays are a sacred event. And I think that it's something you've been looking forward to for weeks. And your husband decides, like, you know, right before, it's like, well, I got to go fix my car. You know, we don't know. Maybe there's reasons. Like, maybe they have to leave early the next morning. You're going out for a nice dinner. You're going to be home late. Maybe there was a reason it needed to happen. But I would just set the rule and the expectation a little bit differently and a little more specifically. Like, this is perfect. In my perfect world, this is what I want. If I can't have that, this is what I want. Does that work for you? Come to an agreement. Move forward. This is just a birthday dinner, but I imagine these types of issues come around, you know, like picking up the kids from soccer or whatever kids do these days. So this is an important type of structure to put into a relationship, I think. But I don't think you're the asshole. I think this is, you know, the Jonathans here have the benefit of, you know, spending a lot of our free time. Like, it's family day today, and we're here talking about relationship dynamics. Like, this is stuff we live for. So I think that, you know, we have a little bit of insight that a lot of, you know, normies may not have on this type of thing, or, you know, it's like kind of an advanced idea. But you're allowed to have what you want. And then here is a different way to get what you want. And if not exactly what you want, you can ask for, you know, plan B. I'm sorry for calling everybody normies. That's not the word I wanted to say, but that's the word that came out. I'll change my name to Norm for the remainder of the podcast.
We want you normies to finally get what you want.
Exactly. Exactly. But I'm sorry. Yeah, that's my opinion. Go ahead.
I'm going to say sort of the asshole. And here's why. Up until everything you did in the scenario itself doesn't make you an asshole. Until the end, I told him that I was tired of him not respecting my time. So that is a conclusion that you have a lot of evidence for. However, the not asshole thing to do is say, why did this happen? Like, why at six, whatever, were you still working on the car? Because I feel like, you know, you and I are definitely on the same page in that the conclusion of this whole story isn't to be fighting each other. It's to be fighting the problem. And then I think that the approach on how to deal with this problem needs to be getting the story. To me, I think that this person has to understand what their husband's kind of internal logic is. And it could very well be, I don't care about this birthday dinner, I care about my car. That could be the answer. I'm not saying it's not, but there are a lot of other explanations that can cause someone to be routinely late. I mean, a pretty prime one in my life is ADHD, where I have time blindness and I didn't realize what time it was. Or I get hyperfixated on a thing. And I think there's an element here where there's a lot of evidence pointing to your husband does care, because at 6:30, when you and the kids were waiting by the door and he was still working on the car, you told him, get ready. And then he did it. And I think that sort of implies that this wasn't necessarily an intentional snub on his part. And if it feels like I'm being too generous to the husband, it's because we don't have the husband's take on this story. And I think that that's the point. The point here is that if you jump to a conclusion without getting a full explanation from your partner, what you're doing is you're deciding what someone's internal monologue, you're reading their mind. And that's not a good way to live your life. Just get the story, figure out what was going on, and then react appropriately based on that story. Don't just assume what would be the case. You know, some people project and say, oh, if I was late to something, it's because I didn't really care about it. So therefore, they must not really care about it. There's a lot of assumptions going on here. So I totally respect that you're pissed and you have every right to be. But I would say that you're fighting the wrong thing.
And also, like, it's the idea, like, in this whole story, what do you want? Like, think of the bigger picture. What is it that you want from your relationship? You want one that's loving, has good communication, all the things that if you were walking down the street and spoke to 100 people, they'd say, I want a relationship that's loving and great communication and, you know, like, lots of affection. When we assume our partner's just being a dick all the time, we're not going to get those things. And it's not that they weren't in this case, but we can behaviorally set expectations differently and also communicate better and have those conversations. Granted, birthday, you're probably not going to want to do that, but the next day, rather than not talking to each other and like giving each other, you know, the dirty side eye in the kitchen, have the conversation.
We're on your side here. Where this show is all about normies getting what they want now.
And absolutely, it's the only thing we care about.
If you want a loving relationship, then we're here to help you get it. That's our point. We're on your side. because your side is getting the relationship that you want, not necessarily making your husband feel bad.
And I think it's time, Jonathan, that we talk about what we want. And I know we bring this up every episode, but I think it's really important. And that is, if you like this show, or if you don't like the show, we don't really care. But we want you to give us a minimum of 15 stars.
I care a little.
Well, that's nice of you.
We don't want a pony is what I'm getting from your response.
No, why don't we want a pony? I just want the stars.
Okay, you want the stars.
I want you to play Mario Party 64. I want you to land on the Bowser space. I want you to go through like that rolling list of different things that you can win or lose. Sure. And we're going to get the like 9,999 star present. And rather than Bowser running away, which you'll know really hurt my feelings if you've listened to our other episodes, we want you to give us those stars. And you can do so on streaming platforms like Spotify, like Apple Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you listen on Deezer, I'm pretty sure you can give us stars or Deezes or whatever they do over there too, which is really, really great. We do this for fun. But really, that's what we tell you. We do this for the stars. We do it for the clout. We do it for the validation. 100%. And we do it to talk about the greatness that is in, the Jonathan's universe. But speaking of the greatness that's in the Jonathan's universe, every episode we like to end with words of wisdom from our very own Jonathan on the show. And Dr. John Rahm, if you'd like to close out the day, we'll do that and then bid you a good evening.
Good evening, or a good morning, I guess. A good morrow?
What? Too soon.
Too soon. Today, this week's quote, "What you leave behind is not what is engraved in stone monuments, but what is woven into the lives of assholes."
Whoa, welcome to Am I the Bleep?